You must be either mad or insane to seek out this godforsaken place. But since you're here, I guess I can show you the Nest of Horrors. Don't fall in.
I am stubbornly still alive, and this is the Nest of Horrors podcast. Some people are afraid of spiders, or heights. Some are even afraid of me. But in this tale, we explore the fear of needles. This story has been pulled out of the nest by Jean-Eve Anderson, entitled Cold Blood. This story is narrated by Josh Beard, Gwen Celia, Maria Corcobado, Nick Reedy, and Emily Coward.
Warning. The following content contains the use of needles, violence, physical harm, and depictions of panic attacks. Reader discretion is advised. Blood work. The mere thought of it made Jenny cringe. If there were two wishes she could make, they would be world peace and the ability to transcend yearly blood tests. It was something so mundane that it shouldn't have been an issue. Still, even the mention of it triggered a special kind of dread within her. Of course, everyone has a fear. For some, it's fire, and for others, it's heights. But for Jenny, it was needles. Ever since she was young, she had this unexplainable fear of needles. No matter what her parents did to soothe her anxieties, the issue would always persist. Every doctor's appointment was a struggle, as they fought tooth and nail to fulfill her vaccinations and complete her blood tests. With time, her fear subsided, at least to a point where it was manageable. However, a voice would always plague the back of her mind come time for her dance with the doctor again. Cut to the present day, February 2008. Jenny found herself in the moments before another dreaded appointment. For some unknown reason, its date was moved forward by 2 months, leaving her more nervous this time around. She tried to distract her thoughts by running a few errands beforehand, but the drive to the clinic brought them flooding back. The otherwise tame suburbs of Boston did little to pacify her. Every traffic light and stop sign she passed was a countdown to face her worst fear. Her entrance into the clinic's parking lot left her feeling queasy on the inside.
Ugh, man, why did those little torture devices have to be invented?
She muttered underneath her breath as she parked in the farthest spot from the building. She needed some time to sit in the car and mentally prepare herself. When she was ready, she left the vehicle and made a beeline for the facility through freezing weather. The building was certainly nothing to write home about, at least to her who'd been there several times before. It was constructed out of cinder block and painted white, not so far off from a prison-inducing high school atmosphere. The front entrance was shielded by a wall of full-sized industrial windows covered in posters, complete with a set of glass double doors. Their reflection was oddly impeccable and held the logo of the clinic. The place in question was known as Vital Labs, a name which, admittedly, she enjoyed repeating to herself because it rolled off the tongue. Stepping inside, the temperature was just as she expected. No matter what time of year, it seemed the building was doomed to remain a whopping 40 degrees Fahrenheit. Right off the bat, she was hit with the strong smell of antiseptic cleaning products, typical for a medical facility such as this, but bothersome to the senses. The interior consisted of smooth, white walls, furnished with paintings of nature and a single television, and grayish-blue carpets maintaining a grid-like pattern. Within the lobby held a cluster of several patients yet to receive care. Their sense of boredom contrasted with Ginny's anxious state as she approached the front counter.
Ginny Pierce for 135.
She tried her best to hide the tension in her voice. The man at the front desk clicked away at a computer before looking up with a courteous smile.
All right, and you are all set. Please have a seat and wait for your name to be called.
She sat cross-legged on the nearest seat she could find, her hands adjusting themselves to rest gently upon the surface of her left leg's knee, one atop another. She looked at the television to see the local news station reciting next week's weather forecast. It was quiet compared to the background music, which played on loop in the cramped lobby.
What's the point of having a TV on if you're going to play music over it?
Dante Wilson? Is Dante Wilson here?
A woman shouted out to the lobby. A scruffy man, no older than 25, followed her down a winding corridor and into the unknown. Jenny couldn't help but watch as he disappeared around a corner, wondering how long it would be until she was their next victim. She checked the clock on the wall.
15 minutes. Oh boy.
She was left with nothing to do but entertain her thoughts.
Seems childish to be this afraid of needles, but I can't help it. When you strip it down to the basics, a needle is just an extremely thin piece of metal, right? But that's what makes it so dangerous. And people insert it underneath their skin. Their skin! Of course something could go terribly wrong. Who knows? Maybe that day is today.
One hand made contact with the back of her neck as she glanced aimlessly around. Soon enough, her eyes stumbled upon a man who was fully immersed in a book.
That man's smart. Maybe I should do that next time.
Ridwan Hakim? Ridwan?
The man snapped out of the world he was lost in and closed the book, following in the same manner as the previous guy. Just like that, her source of curiosity left her, and so she quickly returned to her nervous habits. She fidgeted with her hands, squeezing them and wringing them together over and over. It was involuntary at this point.
I've heard horror stories about needles, nerves being hit, arms becoming inflamed and swollen, veins being blown out entirely. Seriously, I could go on, though I probably shouldn't for my own sake. They might as well be called death on a stick.
She bobbed her foot up and down for quite some time, matching to the beat of the song playing over the PA system.
And the sight of blood. Ugh, don't even get me started. It's so unnatural to see it outside of the body, let alone allow it to be taken by a stranger. And then it gets sent off for testing for some other stranger to take a look at. Before you know it, several people who you will never meet have just toyed around with your blood, something that came from your body. Creepy.
Selena Wilkins.
She checked the clock again. Its arms danced dangerously close to 1:35. She wrung her hands for a second time and took notice of the bracelet on her right arm, except her mind was focused on something different.
Veins themselves are disturbing.
She flipped the arm over to see the veins on her wrist.
I look at them and all I can see is danger.
Her vision was locked on them.
I worry that one day I could see blood pour from my wrists like in some kind of freak accident. Of course, it's just an irrational fear, but it makes my skin crawl.
She carefully traced the winding pattern of veins with her pointer finger. Her expression was mixed with a sense of fascination and terror while she did so.
Gianna Castillo?
The calls of a phlebotomist brought Jenny back to the present. She squeezed her face to get a hold of herself.
Please, you're overthinking this way too much. Don't be so dramatic. It's gonna be okay. Just do what you always do. Look away and close your eyes. It's only a small pinch from this so-called death on a stick and then it's over. Besides, these are medical professionals. If anyone knows what they're doing, it's them, so trust them. Rest assured you'll get home fast and safe, just like every other visit.
Jenny Pierce!
She felt her heart skip upon hearing her name. Her legs became jelly when she stood up and followed a woman down the twisting corridor of patient rooms, with each of their entrances containing blue hospital curtains instead of a traditional door. Together, the two made their way to room 13. The space had a similar design to the lobby and corridor, where Jenny's seat lay in a corner. To her right was a table containing papers and medical equipment, such as a box of surgical gloves, and the needle and vial which would be used to collect her blood. She turned herself in the opposite direction to look away from it. To her left was the doctor who sat at a computer in a black swivel chair.
Hello, Jenny.
Her attitude was bubbly and cheerful.
My name's Sarah, and I'll be the one doing your blood work today. How was your day so far?
Her gentle smile and friendly approach was able to subdue Jenny's anxiety just a bit, which she was thankful for.
It's been good, thank you.
Glad to hear. Now, before we get started, I'll just need a few bits of information, such as your birthday and an insurance ID. Do you have that on hand?
She pulled out a card from her wallet and gave it over to Sarah.
My birthday is April 14th, 1971.
Sarah did what she must with the information and returned the card afterward.
Okay.
The lady proceeded to the table across from her, reaching for the glove box to put a pair of gloves on. They took forever to fit on her hands, sticking onto and smacking against her skin as she applied them. Jenny paid attention too closely, but stopped when she realized it was making her feel worse. She took a deep breath and laid her left hand palm up on the arm of the chair. It was made into a fist shortly after, an unconscious decision which revealed her distress. Sarah was quick to pick up on her body language and uncomfortable expression.
Bit nervous, eh? It's all right. I'll make sure it's over with quickly.
She sat down and flocked to her patient's side with the needle and vial in hand.
A little word of advice. Try not to tense your arm during venipuncture. A relaxed arm makes for a smoother draw and lessens the risk of injury. Those deep breaths you were taking, those were good. Keep doing them. That'll be very helpful.
Her advice proved useful. Another set of breaths allowed her to unfurl her fingers one by one and loosen her arm.
You ready?
Jenny nodded her head in response.
It's okay. It's just another routine appointment. Look away and close your eyes. Better yet, don't even focus on the pinch. Think of what makes you happy. Think of home. Think of your family. Oh, and don't move your arm either.
She was quick to take her own advice as well. Her eyes plunged into the darkness and her head took a sharp turn away from the action. With the sudden absence of light, she pictured herself in the comfort of her own home, the unmistakable scent of lavender enveloping her mind and nose as she walked through the front door. Everything there was kept clean and tidy, because in the privacy of her abode, the power of choice lay in her hands. She pictured herself sinking into the cushion of a couch while she delved into another captivating book, something she'd do when the stress of life became too much. But most importantly, she saw visions of her wife and child as she arrived home, welcoming her back and showing their affection and gratitude for her. She loved them more than they could ever know. These pleasant thoughts filled the void and brought her peace.
Done.
Before she knew it, the procedure was over with. By the time she opened her eyes, the phlebotomist had already bandaged the injection site, allowing Jenny some relief. An immense weight had been lifted off her shoulders.
I'm free.
Sarah discarded the used needle, throwing it into the sharps bin before returning to her swivel chair. She observed the vial of Jenny's blood after further filling out some data on the computer. Meanwhile, Jenny waited quietly with her legs once again crossed, her hands folded together and placed properly on her knees. She was longing to get home and fulfill the visions in her head.
Okay, looks like you're all good to go. Any questions?
The woman looked back as she was about to leave. She held the vial in her hand, ready to place it in storage.
Not any that come to mind, no.
Then you're free to leave. Don't forget to schedule your next checkup at the front counter. Have a nice day.
As she faded behind the curtain, so too did her perky voice, leaving Jenny alone in the room. The hum of the fluorescent light rang in her ears while she stood to organize her belongings. Before she could make it to the hallway, something obstructed her path. A lanky hand gripped the edge of the curtain and pulled it aside. There in the doorway stood another woman, unfamiliar and much unlike Sarah. The lady's whole aura was off-putting. Her stance was the most proper she'd ever seen from another person. Body straight, shoulders back, and a leveled head. Her neck-length hair was the darkest shade of brown. Its waves led the eye's attention to a pale, angular face, the likes of which was partially obscured by a pair of round, green-tinted shades. The most striking feature of her face was the lipstick she wore. It was glossy, the brightest and boldest of reds. The clothing she wore indicated her association with the clinic, as she was dressed in a large, white lab coat, accompanied with black boots underneath an olive-green turtleneck, which stuck out at the top. Her lab coat was incredibly spotless. The only thing you could see on it was a name card attached to the fabrics of her attire.
Kikimora Romanov, clinic owner,
she read to herself. The woman's height over her was somewhat intimidating. So was her empty expression, held as she continued to haunt the exit.
Hello, Ginny, is it?
Her voice was smooth, uncomfortably smooth. It sent a shiver down Ginny's spine.
Yes, Ginny Pierce.
Her face contorted to match the air of awkwardness.
Why?
The heels of Kikimora's boots straightened and made contact with each other, while her legs clung together like superglue.
Forgive me if my presence unnerves you. It seems to be an unintended consequence of my nature. I assure you, I have no ill intention.
What are you here for, Miss Romanov?
That's Mrs. Romanov to you.
She raised an eyebrow. Her voice unveiled a hint of irritation which she was fast to cover up.
Sorry, Mrs. Romanov. What do you need me for?
I have something to disclose to you. It is in regards to your recent blood sample.
Already?
Yes. I noticed some irregularities with your blood when the lady who tended to you carried the vial to storage. Its atypical nature concerned me as an expert in my field of work.
Even with those shades, she could tell Kikamora's eyes were piercing her soul, analyzing, reading her mind like an algorithm.
That's strange. This is the first time I've had such issues with a sample, and Sarah never took notice of this?
Mrs. Paisley is new to this facility. She's not yet accustomed to our standard protocols. That is beside the point of this conversation.
What are these irregularities in my blood? Are they serious?
Regrettably, yes. It could pose an imminent threat to your well-being if left unaddressed.
Ginny's eyes descended upon the ground in deep thought, concerned by the news.
What is it? I have to know.
Please, meet me at my office. I'd prefer to have this urgent discussion in private, if you don't mind.
Her back was turned from her fellow patient, her head craned so sideways she appeared to have the neck of an owl. Her left hand held onto the frame of the doorway, and the other one signaled for her to follow along. She made swift her departure into the hall. Something about this urgent discussion didn't seem right to Ginny, but she followed anyway, not wanting to lose her in the abnormal layout of the building.
She can tell something is wrong just by looking at my sample? Obviously, I'm no expert in health and medicine, but I guess something about its appearance must have alarmed her.
It got harder to follow the doctor's trail because she moved as promptly and as darkly as a shadow. She appeared around the bends easily. Despite a clinic populated with patients and employees alike, the narrow confines were somehow quiet and devoid of life. The walls became barren further along the path, and the lights on the drop-down ceiling steadily grew dimmer, presumably from old age.
What do I know? I kept that vial out of my sight. I wouldn't have known what my blood looked like. They're called professionals for a reason, so I'm sure she knows what she's doing. Right?
They approached the final stretch of the corridor, the tail end, long past the familiar patient rooms. It was an area shrouded in darkness due to clear negligence on the facility's part. The only true source of light came from the office to the left, and the light of an emergency exit straight ahead. Both vied for her attention, trying to outshine each other in a silent screaming match. Kikimora slipped into the office without a second to waste. Meanwhile, Ginny came to a standstill. The uninviting atmosphere made her feel like an animal being lured to a slaughterhouse, yet she moved hesitantly into the office space. A foldable chair was set up for her, however the one behind the desk was empty. She shut the door to the office before resting her purse on the floor and sitting down.
Where did she go?
She turned her head side to side, but she couldn't find the woman anywhere. It was only when she turned far enough that she saw the door of a walk-in closet behind her. The muffled sounds of rummaging emanated from within.
Okay.
In the meantime, she entertained her curiosity by observing the details of the room, especially with what sat in front of her. Shelves, posters, diplomas. However, it was the contents of the desk that piqued her interest the most. In the middle of its surface, just before the vacant chair, sat a collection of printed files stapled together. The front page contained a scattered group of damp marks around the bottom. Next to the files sat a fountain pen, a near-finished cup of coffee, and a desk lamp which had been switched off. Somewhere not too far from these items was a picture frame containing a photo of Kikimora and an unknown man holding each other close. She examined the scene for what felt like hours as she waited patiently. At once, the closet door creaked open. Before she could look back, an object flew past her left like a bullet of a gun, hitting the bottom front of a metal filing cabinet and bouncing off somewhere behind the desk. It moved too fast to see what it was, and let out a crashing sound which echoed throughout the vicinity. The noise of this mystery item startled her and sent her body into a fit of shuddering. She stood up to see what it was, stabilizing her body by placing her palms on the surface of the desk. The source of her fright was inches away from discovery when, suddenly, something struck her violently in the back of the head. The lights went out. When she woke up, she was no longer in the same place as before. She was delirious, disoriented, her eyes pestered by a bright light above her. Said light did not help with the headache she was dealt. For a few minutes, she wasn't scared, just confused. Confused as to where she was and what had happened to her.
Am I home yet?
She thought, trying to comprehend her current situation. Something unknown was stuck over her mouth and muting her groans of pain. It seemed something restricted the rest of her body as well. In time, she came to her senses. The delirium wore off, and her vision cleared to a point where she could process her surroundings. She found herself sitting in a strange room, her arms bound palm up to the arms of the chair she'd been placed in. Her chest and legs, too, had been tied to the back and legs of the seat, respectively. That unknown something over her mouth was tape. Her heart rate soared when she realized the seriousness of her circumstances. In light of this, she became much more alert and looked around the room frantically. It was windowless, concrete, and chillingly bleak. The size of it was enough to induce a claustrophobic feeling, especially if you happen to be held against your will. The light in the room came from a low-hanging lamp attached to the ceiling. Its narrow shade constricted the light in a way that it could only reach Jenny and the area in front of her, leaving the rest pitch dark. What lied beyond her vision was a mystery. However, the vague sound of clanking and kettling meant there was likely a boiler behind her. Ahead of her was an L-shaped table, settled in the corner to her right. It contained a myriad of materials, including drawers, papers, and various types of medical supplies, among a few other things. To the left of the wall straight ahead was a closed metal door. Its hinges screeched as it slowly opened, revealing the presence of a woman.
Kikimora? I don't understand. What could she want from me?
No matter the excuse, she still feared for her life. Kikimora stood in front of her with her hands behind her back. Her posture was perfectly, unnaturally still.
You're awake.
She was less than pleased.
You were out for a good while.
She briefly adjusted the side of her eyewear.
You're quite a sleeper.
Robotically, she made her way to the L-shaped table and went about her preparations, head faced away from her victim. A pair of blue surgical gloves were fitted snugly onto her hands. They produced an audible smack against her arm as the latex was stretched, pulled down, and subsequently let go of.
Let's cut to the chase. Certainly, we've already met, so a second introduction would be redundant.
One by one, she sifted through the papers and materials strewn haphazardly across the table, surprisingly for a woman who looked to be so clean and organized. Dust made visible by the overhead lamp danced around her, scattering into a chaotic frenzy whenever she moved. She selected a few documents from the mess and neatened them before setting them back down on a clearer part of the table's surface. Her fingers operated a butterfly needle with care and sensitivity, checking its surface for defects.
You're here today because you have something I want. Something invaluable.
She turned towards the light, for a better visual of the needle and his tube. As a result, Ginny's attention latched onto the weapon with unparalleled speed.
She's armed!
Prepare yourself for a blood harvesting. It should be relatively painless. That is, as long as you comply. All I need is 2.5 pints.
She said as she continued to handle the needle. Ginny's eyes widened like saucers. She never signed up to have so much blood drained out of her. The distress built to a point where she couldn't help but scream, even if the sound was suppressed by tape. She flailed around in a hopeful attempt to loosen the bonds and escape the chair, trying with all the strength and energy she could possibly exert. But her efforts were futile. The bonds only tightened, further digging into her skin and causing her pain. The failure of her attempts brought immense frustration.
I can't say for certain whether you will live after this. Shame. You have such pretty eyes.
She stopped and stared into the blue of her pupils, observing her struggle for freedom, like a spider observing a fly caught in its web. She was rather unaffected by the commotion at first, with her motionless stance and straight face being proof of this. However, after some time, the noise and the movement grew on her nerves. She grimaced at her squirming around, writhing and thrashing like an injured animal that should have been put out of its misery. Kikimora held her still and tore the tape from her mouth without consideration for the resulting sting. Its presence left a burning mark on her face, making her wince.
Good grief. What is your issue? Afraid of a little pinch?
She glared as if something was wrong with her, a sort of repulsion and contempt that her body language shifted to convey.
2.5 pints? That's over twice the amount they take for blood donations. You're going to kill me!
Yes, but you will be saving another person's life.
She stood tall and sideways and adjusted her shoulders backwards. Her hands held the needle to the light, pinching the shaft with her thumb and her pointer finger to swipe it clean. She did as much to pay respect to its power and precision.
Who? Who is it going to?
Kikimora looked back at her prisoner in a way that suggested the question was taboo, still locked in her previous stance.
That does not concern you.
It does concern me. It's my blood. If you're going to steal it from me, you could at least have the courtesy to tell me who's receiving it.
She lowered the needle and faced forward.
Oh, Ginny, you're so naive. Do you think you have seen this? You're just the means to an end. A vessel for what I need.
I have rights! You can't just take my blood from me without consent. I want to know who it's going to.
She said with a voice of fire, leaning as forward as the bonds would allow for. Her fingers were stretched like claws and her teeth revealed themselves like fangs. She was ready and willing to defend her life, even if she was unable to in the physical sense.
You don't understand, do you? This is about survival. This is about saving a life that matters to me. The recipient doesn't concern you.
My blood, my say. I've got loved ones too, people that care about me. You can't just play with their lives like this. Please, have some humanity.
Humanity? Don't make me laugh.
She scoffed and turned back to the side, dismissing her with a flick of a hand.
The world is a harsh place, and you're just discovering the dark side of it. Your blood will be the price to keep my world intact.
She went to continue her preparations, looking back at her one last time before turning away.
Keep your nose where it belongs and stop probing for answers that, quite frankly, are none of your business.
Jenny's heart sank lower into her chest. Left to the stillness of the sound and the air, her mind began to spiral at the thought of the needle. It was a blood-sucking vampire that wouldn't stop until she was dead. Nothing could convince her otherwise, now that she was faced with a life-threatening situation. She looked over at Kikimora, who was almost done constructing her lethal procedure. The sight of it made her nearly slip into a panic, narrowly escaped by taking steady breaths and focusing her attention on the ground.
This isn't the time to spiral. You can't give up. Not now. You have too much on the line.
She was able to briefly quell the trembling.
Just keep probing. Eventually she'll have to spill. Then maybe you can reason with her.
She mustered the courage to speak up, or at least enough that she appeared calm.
You said you were doing this to save a life that matters to you.
Her head was tilted gently to the side when she broke the silence.
There must be someone important, right?
So, what of it?
She paused in her work to make a retort, her face still pivoted towards the table.
Is it for a friend?
No.
A sibling?
She continued.
No, I told you.
She hissed.
One of your parents?
The guise of her professionalism was close to shattering. She clutched the table's edge with an exceptional amount of force, declining to answer the last question. Jenny paused, struck with an epiphany. The answer was clear now. It lied in her first interaction with the doctor. The correction on her use of honorifics was not just for formality, and that unknown man in the picture frame seemed less of a stranger. Even there in the present, she noticed a ring sitting on the table, caught somewhere between the discord of its contents.
Is it for your husband?
The question triggered an outburst from the woman. She slid her hands across the table and caused an assortment of papers to fly onto the floor.
Yes, yes, it's for my husband. Are you happy now, you pest?
Her voice was sharp and shrill, much unlike the smooth voice she spoke in before, and the red of her lips stuck out twice as much as it once did. Desperation oozed from the visible parts of her face as she lunged at Jenny with gritted teeth and clenched fists. She shook one of said fists angrily for her to see. Jenny flinched wildly. She was stunned and unsettled by Kikimora's reaction. Her moment of passion unveiled an entirely different side of her, one that was untamable and much less formal than what lied on the surface. Despite this, her fear dwindled and led to a newfound wave of sympathy.
I'm so sorry. What happened to him?
Her softened eyes looked into the lenses of her captor with genuine concern. Kikimora stood quiet. The cogs in her head were turning, reassessing.
Gold AI Hitch A.
She revealed bitterly, with a scowl that could turn a person to stone. The light from above bounced off her lenses and reflected with a great intensity.
Cold A-I-H-A?
She took a long breath to compose herself, attempting to appear as if she'd never lost her temper. Her fists released, yet were still rigid.
Cold autoimmune hemolytic anemia. It's a disease in which one's immune system produces antibodies that attack the red blood cells, in particular when the body is exposed to cold temperatures.
The tone of her voice was forced at first, masking itself to try and hide the severity of her true emotions.
It was discovered when he was admitted to the hospital for a rapid onset of symptoms. The cause remains unknown. But what we do know is that due to the sudden development of his condition, a blood transfusion is necessary for his survival. It should be well manageable afterwards.
Why do you need me to do that? Why resort to this? There's plenty of blood donors out there. I'm sure that...
Not for AB negative, there isn't. You and my husband share the same blood type. And I'll be damned if I let the opportunity escape me.
She was quick to snap back, putting her arms behind her back and clasping her fingers together without so much as a hint of hesitation. Her hands wrung each other aggressively, causing the latex of her gloves to squeal and her nails to dig into the skin underneath. The sound of the boiler was louder than earlier, filling the two's ears with a bothersome hissing noise. It did a poor job of hiding its wails, sounding as if it were due any second to burst at the seams. Jenny took this as a bad omen. Kikimora leaned in.
Don't you realize that only 1% of the US population is AB negative? 1%.
She stepped back and relaxed herself, maintaining eye contact all throughout.
Consider yourself special, Jenny. Special, like my husband.
Her voice was monotone, but her body language told a different story entirely. She seemed longing, disassociated, even misty-eyed, like she'd been lost in thought, lost in another world. Swiftly, she got a hold of herself and molded her posture into something stiff and motionless.
Yes, but even if your husband is AB negative, he'll still be able to receive other blood types.
Don't act as if you know more than me, Smat Elik.
She spoke coldly.
I'm well aware that AB negative is compatible with a select few types. The issue is his condition, an unfortunate side effect of cold AIHA is that his blood reacts poorly to other blood types, making him incompatible. Cross-sampling proved as such. He needs another AB negative for the transfusion, and you are going to be that person, whether you like it or not.
Wait, how did you know my blood type?
She asked while bracing herself in anticipation for Kikimura's rage, which seemed to reveal itself unpredictably. She was walking on eggshells whenever she opened her mouth, constantly dancing on a fine line between chilling detachment and passionate anger. There was no telling how long her current state would last until she shifted to something more dangerously expressive.
It's a matter of precaution. We keep records of each patient's blood type and health issues as part of their medical history. You were one of two patients at this clinic with the AB negative blood type. Between the two of you, your blood was much more suitable because of your cleaner history. That is why you are here now.
Don't you see how much you're risking for this? Your career, your marriage, your freedom! It could all be gone in an instant if you're caught.
That is not going to happen.
You don't know that. Please, just spare me already. This is insane.
Suddenly, Kikimura lifted her arms into the air, hands stretched tight as if prepared to attack.
I work my fingers to the bone. Blood, sweat, and tears go into keeping this business afloat. And what do I get in return? A doctor telling me my husband will die without the right treatment? As the owner of this clinic, I have the power to take fate into my hands.
Her voice boomed loud in unison with the boiler, while her legs struck a defensive position, causing her upper body to subtly lean forward. Ginny's eyes shut fearfully, her face recoiling sheepishly to the side. The volume of Kikimura's voice shook her to the core. In spite of this, she looked ahead and bit back with a slowly diminishing spirit.
Personal struggles don't justify violating someone's autonomy, and being in a position of power doesn't give you the right to do so either. You, of all people, should know this. You're a doctor, for crying out loud. Take a look at yourself in the mirror.
Then tell me, Ginny, if you were in my shoes, wouldn't you do anything to save the person you love most?
Not if it meant hurting an innocent person. I have compassion.
If you truly love someone, you do what is best for them. That is what I am doing right now.
Trust me, Mrs. Romanov. The best thing you can do is let him go.
Ginny soon discovered her answer was the wrong one. Her left shoe met the wrath of the doctor's heel, feeling the crush of the boot upon her foot. The impact was swift and powerful, leaving her unable to defend herself against it. As if she could, anyways. She squirmed in pain and struggled to produce words in the aftermath of the brutal stomp. To Kikimura, she was simply a bug that needed to be dealt with. But she couldn't let herself be silenced. The woman's escalation to violence frightened her, though she had to keep a brave face if she wanted any chance at survival, even if those chances were slim to none. Her dwindling resolve wasn't a good sign.
I'm running out of things to say.
It's so easy for you, isn't it?
Her attitude was tainted by spite.
You don't know what it's like to see the love of your life dying in a hospital bed. To see someone you care about become a shell of themselves. Why don't you have compassion for me? It's times like this where you must think of your family.
And what about my wife? How will she cope with the loss? How will our child be affected by this? Losing one of their parents at such a young age. Don't they matter too? After all, I'm only thinking of my family just like you.
Don't be so delusional. If one parent is gone, the child still lives. They'll be fine in the care of your wife.
Can't the same be said about you and your husband? How can you look someone in the eyes and tell them that? Something so cold and malicious. Please, you have to realize that life goes on. Let him rest.
She gazed at her with the most sympathetic expression she could, highlighting the blue of her pupils tenfold. They tried their hardest to pierce through the mystery of her lenses and reach into her soul, searching for any semblance of humanity left within her. Anything, anything at all to sow the seeds of empathy in her heart. Her voice was soft and gentle, partly because she'd grown weary from the fighting. This was her final resort, the last thing she could think of to get through to her. Something changed in the way Kikimora conducted herself. She didn't have a response. Rather, she froze in place like a statue. It didn't seem like Jenny's words had much to do with it. More so, it was the face she made which perplexed her. Her green eyes revealed themselves when she took off her eyewear. They looked back at her, staring straight into hers as if she was stuck in time. Something paralyzed her so terribly that her face painted a picture of horror and reflection. In all their time spent arguing with each other, she had never seemed so vulnerable. It was like she'd become someone else. Her expression went through a slew of emotions, but ultimately settled when her eyebrows plunged scornfully in the midst of a sudden revelation. Whatever this revelation was, Jenny would never know.
You told me to look into a mirror, correct? Well, I am. I see the past when I look at you. But that's the thing. I'm not like you anymore. No, I'm something stronger.
She exuded a new sense of confidence and gave into the obscurity of her shades once more. Thus her fate was sealed when she returned to the table, collecting her supplies to set the scene of the terrible blood harvest.
See, you're the one who needs to realize that the world is a cruel and unforgiving place. It has a dark sense of humor, a sick way of telling jokes. Every day, innocent people become victims to things beyond their control, and you're simply one of them. You were in the wrong place. At the wrong time, and unfortunately for you, there's no undoing that.
But...
No buts. Listen here, Pierce. You and I are not here to debate morals or ethics. We're here to get the job done. And nothing on this miserable earth is going to stop me.
A needle occupied her grip. It was attached to a tube, connecting it to a blood bag on a dropper stand. There were two of each on both sides, for the sake of efficiency.
Now, I suggest you close your eyes and take some deep breaths. You can't weasel your way out of this.
What would your husband think if he saw this side of you?
Her voice trailed off from fatigue.
It's easy. He never will.
She knelt over and applied a tourniquet one after the other. Her fingers searched for a good placement of the butterfly needles, feeling around the area of her wrists with a cold touch.
A little secret dies here.
A new piece of tape was stuck over her mouth to silence her.
So this is it?
She sat bitter and defeated, a thousand-yard stare on her face. Her mind stewed as she waited for what happened next, knowing there was nothing left for her to do. She'd exhausted all of her choices, everything she could have done, and none of it worked. Her mind and body were worn down like old, rusty machinery, having taken a toll from the harsh conflict. It consumed her, and there was still the blood harvest yet to go.
I should have chosen that exit.
The skin of both her forearms was sanitized and stretched, moments away from being punctured. There was nothing standing between the two as she looked on in horror. a stark contrast from the prior blood work appointment. Deep breaths were barely enough to keep her from producing fists. This time, she couldn't help but stare as the needles were inserted into her forearms, her dread accentuating the sting of the pinch as they dug to the veins. It felt like spiders crawling into her body, triggering her fight-or-flight response in the process. Her breathing grew fast and heavy at the sight of her blood being extracted. Only then did she look away, her eyes welded shut. She tried to think of things that could bring her comfort, but instead they served as reminders of her fate. She dove further into panic when these efforts failed, and as her breaths grew heavier, so did the feeling in her chest. Her heart pounded madly, something she worried would play out in Kikimora's favor. The blood began to pool in the bags after some time, a sight that was pleasing to the doctor. Muscle tension plagued her. It made her whole body ache, though it was most concentrated in her arms. She could feel the deadly instrument shift and stir underneath the surface of her skin, resulting from bouts of shaking that became stronger and more uncontrollable by the second. They were parasites feeding on their host, draining Jenny of her life force, little by little. Her impending sense of doom fought against her efforts to tame the trembling, putting her at risk of injury.
Hold still, won't you?
Kikimora snapped. She sat in a chair at the table, overseeing her every move as the harvesting transpired. Ironically, the remark wasn't helpful in the slightest, instead worsening the depth of her terror. It wasn't long before her right arm developed a mind of its own and resisted. It jerked violently despite its restriction by tight bonds. She let out a muffled yelp, her eyes bolting open and wandering upon the injection site, fearing the worst. Luckily for her, the bleeding was minimal. It clumped together in a small puddle, like honey oozing from a container, forming a shining bead of crimson on her forearm. Kikimora loomed upon her with annoyance and took the needle out to readjust it. However, the right arm wouldn't stay in place. It shook side to side to avoid being stabbed again, completely out of Jenny's influence. If it were up to her, she would have kept it still just to get it over with.
Stay still, dammit.
A low growl slipped from the phlebotomist's mouth. She dug her claws into the disobedient arm and forced it still, pricking the needle back into place. It continued happily sucking the blood from her veins. Chills ran up and down her spine, her head lighter than a balloon. By then, the two blood bags neared full, and the panic steadily died down. She started to feel weak from the blood loss and drifted towards the edge of unconsciousness, evident by the way her eyes struggled to stay open. Her mind was left to wonder how she'd gotten tangled in someone else's mess, and if maybe she deserved it for something in her past. Nothing in particular came to mind. It didn't matter if it was karma or not, though, because she would have met the same end either way. Soon, her body came to a halt, and Kikimora's face became the last thing she saw before it all faded to black. Surprisingly, in spite of the blood loss, Jenny awoke for a second time. The frigid temperature she was left in produced a mild state of hypothermia. This, in combination with a sudden rush of adrenaline, defiant of her mental and physical weakness, brought her back to life. The more severe symptoms of her blood loss were delayed, though only for a short time. She laid on the ground while she regained consciousness, her temple touching the foundations of a strange new area. As she gained awareness of her location, she realized just how dark and lonely it was, causing her vision to be vastly limited. From the echoes of her movement, she would have guessed the place to be a large building, perhaps once a warehouse or a factory, long since abandoned. She sat up and tore the tape from her mouth. No longer was she concerned with the sting. What mattered now was survival. In the far distance, she could see a patch of light hiding behind a thick pillar, however weak it was, and hoped it was a way out. Its glow was her North Star, guiding her to the possibility of freedom. She put all her strength into standing, trying not to place too much pressure on her arms while she did so. She limped towards the light, with her back hunched forward and her arms stretched out in front of her. Her feet acted like detectors, feeling for anything on the ground before she took a step. But halfway through, her job became hasty. She tripped and fell on a section of rusted metal. Her body ached, and she couldn't get back up. Even so, the adrenaline allowed her to crawl on her hands and feet the rest of the way.
This is bad. Really bad. I need help, but I'm not sure if I can go to the hospital after this. How do I know the doctors won't use me like a lab rat?
Her remaining blood ran cold from the prospect. The source of the light revealed itself as it grew closer, no longer obscured by the pillar. She was disappointed to discover it was just a hole at the edge of the ceiling, one she obviously couldn't reach. Her heart sank. She resigned and hauled her body to the pillar to rest against its smooth yet crumbling surface. Her lungs needed a minute or two to catch up after feeling so lightheaded.
I was so stupid to think I could make it out alive. I'm probably somewhere far outside the city anyway.
Her hands gripped the sides of her shoulders in an attempt to warm herself, with the toes and the tips of her fingers being coldest. She stared at the laces of her shoes with a dazed expression, shivering and tired. Everything in her sight was deteriorating, distorting and blurring like a camera out of focus.
My family doesn't even know where I am. My body might never be found.
She could feel herself drown in the silence. The loneliness that permeated her being and left her totally helpless. The feeling weighed heavy in her chest. Recalling the terrible memories from earlier gave rise to a deep pit of trauma that implanted itself in her mind. Anguish crept upon her from the darkness of the building's cavities. There was only one positive she could think of.
At least I can say that I tried.
Even though the environment was dry and bitter, a graceful patch of vines was able to grow from the cracks and cling to the cement wall, starting from the ceiling and flowing to the floor. She looked ahead at it and lifted a palm towards the waning daylight. It was as warm as it could have been, given the winter season. The effects of her adrenaline had worn away and left her feeling oddly tranquil. However, it also made her weaker than she already was. Her energy was quickly fading.
Even when I'm about to die, life never ceases to amaze me.
She made one last effort to move, despite her body protesting. She crawled through dust and debris to reach the vines, probing the texture of its leaves with her hand as she sat beside the illuminated patch of green. If she was going to die, she'd at least make her deathbed a peaceful one. Her muscles relaxed, her joints loosened, and even with all the pain she felt, in every sense of the word, that too began to fade.
It's okay. Just think of it as a really long nap.
The vines wrapped around her body and embraced her like a hug, a reminder of her family before she left. She closed her eyes and offered herself to Mother Nature. Meanwhile, the attention of Kikimora lay strongly on her husband. Within the next few days, evidence of Jenny's presence at the clinic was gone. Records of her check-in were deleted, and the vial of her recent blood sample was destroyed. Files were erased, documents were forged, and in due time, her husband received the long-awaited blood transfusion. The procedure was a success. His health was restored to its former glory, albeit through a slow and steady recovery. Nothing could describe the joy she felt in seeing her spouse alive and well. But one thing was for certain, she would never be the same again. She sold herself to the devil the instant she chose Jenny's fate for her. Although she washed herself free of the crime, her soul was stained in a way that could never be cleansed, permanent as the handprint of Molly Maguire's. She may have escaped the clutches of the law, but in doing so, fell victim to a prison of her own making, one of lies and cover-ups that would follow her for the rest of her life. Behind Jubilation hid a murderer, a woman who lacked remorse for her wrongdoings. By the end, Kikimora proved herself to be something less than human. Something with blood on its hands.
Hope you enjoyed this episode and will join us for more.